Johnny Torrio.
Johnny Torrio.
Ghosties.
Yeah, we're gonna get some ghosties.
Some pasties.
If you had a pet ghostie, what would you name him?
Greg.
Stop. Anyway, true crime and ghosties. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
I'm ready!
We're gonna talk about Al Capone.
Al Capone?
Al Capone. Who's the actor? Al Gore? Is that...
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino. I got them confused for the longest time.
Al Gore.
I think he was like a prophet or something. Politician is what I meant.
He's a prophet.
Stop. That word is triggering. I grew up in a cult.
I'm a prophet. I'm all these motherfuckers.
We thank thee, O God, for a broad.
That's what it really is. P-R-O-F-I-T.
P O no.
Profit.
No, that's P-R-O-F-I-T.
No, I'm saying that's why they call themselves that, because they profit off all those people.
That's genius. Anyway, are you ready to dig into this? This is the St. Valentine's Day murderer. St. Valentine's Day massacre.
I'm a murderer.
This is the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Sure. St. Valentine's Murder.
Okay. This is considered one of the bloodiest historical events that happened in Chicago in 1929.
We were there.
Yeah, we were.
We didn't see this, huh?
No, we were just walking past. Actually, you'll find us later in the story. Also known as one of the grisliest unsolved murders of mafia history. Bum bum bum.
Mafia.
However.
The huge mafia.
However, the events that led to this massacre, or murderer, depending on who you are.
Yeah, depending on who you ask.
Began in 1924 with the murder of gang leader Dion O'Bannon.
Why they always just got the Ireland?
Because they're
not
Irish.
Islands. Oh, yeah.
They're Irish. O'Bannon was the chief competition to Chicago Outfit Leader, which was the South Side. Johnny Torrio.
Oreo. With the T.
Torrio Oreo. Okay. Johnny Torrio in the bootleg liquor business. O'Bannon had this North. Had this North Side.
He had this North Side. And Torrio had the snort side.
It is getting to be 10 a.m. p.m.
Oh, yeah, oh my god. Oh, I can do that
again. O'Bannon had the north side, and Torrio had the south side. After a brewery acquisition deal between the two men went bad, Torrio ordered a hit on O'Bannon. North Side Gang vowed revenge, and a 5-year war between the two gangs began. Torrio was later shot and seriously wounded. He would survive his injuries, but decided to give control to his decided to give his control of the outlet to Al Capone.
He decided to give the control of his outfits to Al Capone.
I have been mortally wounded. Please pick out my outfits.
Thank you. Hey, that was good, huh? Oh, yeah.
I need you to know, also a sub...
Fuck you, man. I'm wearing that.
It's not my color. I almost said a shub. a subgenre of this gang, which is not a subdivision of this gang, is also called the Purple Gang.
Purple. The purple people eaters.
The purple gang from the outfit.
The beam anchor.
Someone put us in charge of naming gangs. Anyway.
The snort side.
Snort side. Okay, I'm gonna try that whole sentence again. Torio was later shot and seriously wounded. That's not what's funny. I'm so sorry he was wounded.
It was a late session.
Torio was later shot and seriously wounded. He would survive his injuries, but decided to give his control of the outfit to Al Capone. I did it! Capone's gang went on to take out Obanian ally Jaime Weiss, leaving the Northside bootlegging operation in the hands of George Bugs Moran.
I am me. Jaime.
So what you say when you look in the mirror?
Jaime.
That was his name.
Stat.
That was his name, Jaime.
Damn names. There's no one named Jaime now.
We should name our kid Jaime. You don't like it? You're okay with Cornelius, but not Jaime? What if we have twins? Can we name them Cornelius and Jaime?
Oh, this is Jaime Hyman.
Oh my god. That hurt my chest a lot. Fun fact, Jaime is short for Hyman. George Bugs Moran, who was an enemy of Capone.
Bugs Life.
Ooh, you know they made a real Bugs Life? On Disney Plus? It's just a bunch of bugs crawling around. Huh. This was free advertising for Disney Plus.
Sponsor us.
Give us...
100 million?
No, that's too much. What would we do with $100 million?
You don't want to know.
You gonna leave me?
No.
Okay, well then, I don't care actually. Capone wanted nothing more than to off Moran and be done with him once and for all.
Get him off.
Nope. Don't get him off.
Get him off.
How about just kill him?
That's what they used to say. We don't kill. We get him off.
Back in 1929, there was a warehouse or garage, as I have seen it described as both. I'll be calling it a warehouse. I don't like the term garage.
That's a big difference.
Well,
warehouse can be massive. No, garage can be like the size of the living room.
I know, but I'm just gonna call it a warehouse.
A warehouse can be like a full block.
I think you're being dramatic. You can shrug your shoulders and shake your head at me all you want. You're gonna say a warehouse?
I think they're too rich to have a little garage.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's located at 2122...
23.
2122 North Block on North... Jump right into your ass.
Yeah.
There was a warehouse...
somewhere around there.
Located... at 2122 North Block on North Clark Street. But now there's a vacant lot between an apartment building and a retirement center. That's what currently stands there. The massacre took place around 10:30 a.m. on Valentine's Day. Capone, who was in his Florida home, arranged to have someone contact Moran and tell him a special shipment of bootleg whiskey had arrived from Canada and would be shipped to the warehouse. When a group of Moran's associates arrived at the warehouse, four of Capone's associates, two dressed as police officers and two in business suits, stormed in. The two dressed as police officers gave the appearance that they were doing a raid, going as far as showing up in a police car. Capone's associates lined up the six members of Moran's gang, the north wall of the warehouse. This includes Adam Hare and Pete Gusenberg, John May, Al Wainshank, Albert Kachelk, also known as James Clark. Also another man who made it to the lineup was Reinhardt Schwimmer, a 29-year-old optometrist.
Oh, yeah, David
I know him. Yeah. 70 rounds of ammo was used. The machine's gun made a...
The machine's gun? The dead machine's gun.
The machine guns made a lot of noise, which caused neighbors to stop and look around, but the decoy police officers and car made it look like the scene was under control.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Everything's good. They're all shooting each other, but the cars are there.
Well, there's also two police officers.
They know what they're doing.
The two men dressed as police officers handcuffed their accomplices, who arrived in civilian clothing, and threw them in the back of that police car. They drove off with the lights and sirens on. The bodies were undiscovered for 3 hours. And then this is where you and I come into play, okay? They were only found because the mechanic... we actually don't come in until later. Give me a second. They were only found because the mechanic and former safecracker...
Oh, mechanic and your safecracker.
That's the same person. Mechanic and former safecracker, John May, brought his German Shepherd Highball to the garage that morning. So Highball was not harmed at all. He had been tied to a truck at the back of the garage. This is where we come into play. Also, this is hilarious. Hold on. I will pause. I'll tell you the hilarious part, actually. The woman who arrived... The woman who lived in the apartment building heard the dog barking and wondered why nobody was comforting the poor dog. She was afraid to go in by herself, so she enlisted the help of a male neighbor. The male neighbor went in and then ran out screaming that there were dead bodies everywhere.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was us. It is believed that the intended target of the shooting was the rival gang leader, George Bugs Moran, but he was late for a meeting with his lieutenant. When he arrived, he saw the fake police officers getting out of their vehicles. He decided not to get involved and went to a nearby coffee shop with his lieutenant, missing the whole massacre and aftermath.
You're lucky.
Mm-hmm. Because Capone was not in the state... No one could tie him to the massacre, and no one was tried for the crime. Yeah, so that's why it's unsolved. Even though it's pretty cut and dry. Yeah. So now we're going to get into a little bit of a deep dive on the history of that area. Which is funny, because it's just like a little tiny area. In 1949, the front half of the warehouse was converted into an antique furniture storage shop. The people who started this business were unaware of the tragedy that happened only 20 years earlier. The store was not successful because of the majority of the people who visited the store were tourists, because everyone else knew about the massacre. So nobody was buying furniture.
Oh, yeah.
In 1967, the building was torn down except for the wall where the shooting occurred. And the wall was integrated into the wall of the men's restroom at a nightclub. And I'll get into that in a little bit, because that's actually a funny story, okay? And I need your opinions on it.
Yeah.
Today, the site is a fenced-in field belonging to a nursing home. 300 of the bricks from the wall where the men were murdered are on display in the Mob Museum in Vegas. The missing 100 bricks have been sold over the internet to many gang buffs. Gangster buffs.
Gang buffs.
The bricks were especially sought after if they had blood or bullet holes in them.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants it.
I don't know. The city has decided that nothing will be built on the spot ever again. And now we're going to do a little deep dive into the ghosties of this area, okay? Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you to look at my screen for this, because I want you to be surprised.
I'm looking right at it, but I can't see it.
I figured. Okay. The 100 missing bricks are said to bring bad luck to those who own them. The killings caused the bricks to soak in the negative energy that was pretty powerful. Some people have claimed to have gotten into terrible car accidents or have gotten horrible diseases after receiving one of these bricks. It is said that when the nightclub shut down, the bricks were sold to for $1,000 apiece. Many of the bricks, however, were given back because of its bad luck. The Mob Museum in Vegas, where some of these bricks reside, still have reports of people hearing gunshots, men groaning, and falling to the ground. You didn't hit the ground hard enough. Okay, are you ready for this? Because I think this is the funniest story I will ever hear about a haunted place.
Yeah.
Canadian businessman George Patey bought the bricks at an auction. He took the bricks on tours and also tried to open a crime museum in 1969, but was unsuccessful. Instead, he reassembled the bricks into a urinal wall with conveniently placed targets where men were supposed to aim their urine. Don't worry, women were allowed in to see the wall.
They were?
Yeah. Oh. This place was called the Banjo Place. The Banjo Place. The Banjo Place closed in 1976, and afterward the wall was auctioned off again, one brick at a time.
Pee-pee bricks.
Imagine that. You're just like, I want an old piece of history. Yuck. It smells like a bullet hole.
Gunpowder.
In old pictures of the massacre. Is that the correct word?
Yeah, the murderer.
In old pictures of the massacre, you will see a four-story gray stone at 2120 North Clark Street. That building still stands, and the owner has reported a lot of poltergeist activity that takes place inside the house. I read this article, and then the two things that he listed. So, a lot of poltergeist activity takes place inside the home, such as objects flying off the counters and falling off of shelves. Yeah. Sounds like that man has cats.
Maybe.
I just think if you're gonna, like, say it's a poltergeist, you gotta have more than just two things. Those who are walking by this area with their animals experience a strange phenomenon as well. Dogs tend to fear this area. Dogs will bark or howl at this area, and occasionally some will whine in fear. People have reported unusual mists and lights, men's voices when there's no one in sight or even near the area, screaming from men, and machine guns firing. People who are sensitive and are in this area may notice a real sense of panic and fear. Al Capone himself said he saw an entity and was haunted by this entity until he passed away. It is believed that the brother-in-law of the intended target, George Bugs Moran, haunted Al Capone immediately after the massacre. Capone hired a medium with the intent of sending the entity, James Clark, to the other side in 1931. However, it is believed that James Clark haunted Capone until the day he died. And then, that's all I have on the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
That was a pretty crazy murder.
It was Al Capone, wasn't it? He set it up.
Yeah, he was just too smart.
Too smart. Okay, are you ready for our true crime question of the day? Okay. Oh, Jesus. On December... Oh, this is a good one. This actually has to do with mobsters. On December 11th, 1978, a small team of mobsters walked into John F. Kennedy International Airport in Queens, New York, and committed what was, at the time, the biggest heist in American history. What did they steal? A. $23.5 million worth of diamonds. B. $3.9 million in cash. C. $5.8 million in cash and jewelry, or D, 12 paintings valued at over $50 million.
Mm. I don't think an airport got diamonds like that.
I've never...
Or paintings. Unless I see.
You're correct. I can't imagine an airport having $58 million in cash and jewelry, though.
50? Or what did you say? We'll see.
$5.8 million in cash and jewelry.
Wow.
Like, I'd imagine they'd have to rob multiple places to get that amount. And was just never stopped.
Took care of my luggage?
Because technically the case is unsolved, but everybody knows that it was a hit by the South Side. I don't have any phone number to call about that one.
I had 911.
No, don't call 911. It's not an emergency.
It might be.
But that one gave you a little bit into spooky spooks, too. Little ghosties.
I'm scared.